Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. And I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries.
So good morning, Ed. How you doing?
Good morning. We've got a bunch to talk about, Ray, and we will handle it professionally and courteously and with a smile.
Yes, like absolutely.
Like we do everything, right?
Service with a smile.
Service with a smile. We're going to be talking in just a few minutes with Dr. Lenny Lucchetti. I think that's the way you pronounce his name. He's Italian. He's from the, Ray, from the famous Lucchetti crime family.
Then he's going to have some amazing stories to share with us.
We're actually going to be talking with him about his book, True Depth, Moving Beyond Cultural Churchianity. That should be interesting. Bottom of the hour, we will update you on the local situation we had here in the hometown of our flagship station for American Family Radio, Tupelo, had a controversy over some ladies who wanted to do some prayer walks in local public schools, had that all set up. The Freedom From Religion Foundation got its panties in a wad. I hope I can say that on radio. It's too late now if I can't. But we have a very positive update on that. We'll also have Dave and Beth Weichel talking about growing close to God through loss. And then next hour, Douglas Axe, who is director of the Biologic Institute. And we're going to be talking to him about intelligent design. So we've got a bunch of great subjects to cover, Ray. But first, you know where we're going.
Oh, I do know.
We're going to Cleveland.
Yes.
To talk about the convention last night. And I watched it. You said you watched it. I will say this. It was an electrifying night in terms of some really good speeches, some controversy. So I'm going to throw out, let's talk about four names.
Okay.
We're going to leave Ted Cruz for last, okay,
right?
Because that might have been the most controversial moment of the night. But Donald Trump Jr. and / the Trump kids, we'll talk about that, Newt Gingrich's speech, Mike Pence's speech, and then Ted Cruz. First, we talked about this on Tuesday. Mike Pence, the vice presidential candidate for Trump, had a great line where he's talking about the Trump kids, and he said, "You can't fake good kids." And Donald Trump Jr. had a really good speech, and I listened to Ivanka Trump after everything was said and done, being interviewed by Sean Hannity, and these kids are stealing the show.
You know, it wasn't easy last night for Eric Trump to come on. I mean, he came on right after the Ted Cruz thing. And so that's not an easy moment, right?
Right.
And he stepped up. And all those kids, they've just done, politics aside, if you're a parent, you're going to be so proud to see your kids do so well under that kind of pressure, national spotlight. Tiffany Trump, who I'd never even heard of until she spoke, all the Trump kids so far, I think, have acquitted themselves very well, and they have brought credit to their father and to his candidacy.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I forget if it was you or I was talking with Abe yesterday. I just one day melts into the other sometimes, but it's you want to always put as a presidential candidate, especially someone like Donald Trump, who is not a politician. So you're already, you know, kind of up against it and trying to convince people that you can do the job. You want to put your best assets forward. And with his wife, to a lesser extent, but certainly with his kids, he has done that. And like you said, they're bringing credit and maybe some credibility to Donald Trump and humanizing him, kind of, you know, letting people see behind the celebrity apprentice and the brash, you know, campaigning, you know, billionaire. And I think in the long run, that's going to help him.
Well, I was just, while you were talking, I can't remember ever a presidential candidate who has relied so heavily on his own family. Right. I mean, I just can't. Usually the wife will say something here and there. Melania did a fine job
right.
in the speech she gave. I can't remember ever a candidate who has brought his kids out, and not just for, quote, photo ops, but put right. them in really, because if the kids had blown it, really hurt the whole cause.
Yes.
So it's remarkable, Ed. Nothing like it in recent history, at least. And I think Ivanka is going to introduce her dad tonight. I think she will do terrific. So it may be hard for Donald Trump himself to live up to what his kids have done. That's how good they've been.
Yeah, and it's a good point, because these were big league moments.
Oh yeah.
So they did. They acquitted themselves, and my understanding is they are in the inner circle of his advisors too. So a sharp group of kids. I say kids; they're young adults. I think that has gone well during the convention. I really like Newt Gingrich's speech. He is just—he's an encyclopedia. Now he spoke about the threats from radical Islam, and I mean just made put the cookies on the bottom shelf, so to speak.
Well, he's a brilliant man. His knowledge is, as you said, encyclopedic. There's that professorial. Genial professorial air. He gets up there, and I mean, you think to yourself, whether he's reading it or not, he could do this by memory for an hour and a half.
Yes,
and keep us all spellbound. And gotta say, to credit to the Republicans, Gingrich especially, but all of them, they haven't shied away from saying radical Islamic terrorism. That has been driven home from the first note. And he did a tour de force on the Republican approach to foreign policy. Clear distinction, drew a super clear distinction between the Republican position and Hillary and the Democrats.
Right. Third, the speech that I just, it was really kind of a surprise, Mike Pence. He's the, the Indiana governor. He's the vice presidential pick for Trump. Very smart move. But I didn't know much about Mike Pence, except what I've read in the newspaper when he worked in Congress and so on and so forth. But knew he was a strong Christian. He was unapologetic about his faith, but he was very funny. And he introduced his mom, who's in her 80s, I think, and just 82 years old, I think, and just a very human kind of a speech. Very humble when he mentioned a lot of. For people who don't know me, he said, which is probably most of you, he made kind of the things that detractors might have pointed out as a weakness. He kind of made them, humanized them, and might have made them into a strength. So I thought it was a great job by Mike Pence.
Well, terrific. A++. A lot of self-deprecating humor. He shores up some weaknesses that Trump had, especially with, say, movement conservatives. And Pence is just, he's easy to listen to, right? He knows his stuff. He's not a great orator in the style of some other people, but you listen to him and you think, there's a trustworthy man.
Right.
If he's going to run with Donald Trump, that says something good to me about Trump himself. So.
Yes, and it was a good line that Mike Pence had when he said, look, people who know me know I'm kind of soft-spoken and boring, he said, so I guess Donald Trump just wanted to balance out the ticket. It was just a funny line. He had some really good lines, laugh-out-loud lines. All right, the last thing I want to talk about the convention last night is the thing that probably most conservatives and Republicans are talking about, and that is Ted Cruz speaking before the convention. I thought it was a very good speech up until the moment that I expected him to endorse Donald Trump, and then he didn't, and he basically got booed off the stage. So what is your take? Do you think that's a mistake by Ted Cruz? What's your take?
Two quick points. Number one, I think he did what I think he went up there and decided to be true to his convictions. And I gotta say, God bless any man in that position. He's a genuine constitutional conservative. I mean, Ed, you've interviewed him, I mean, right. on the network. I mean, we know Ted Cruz. We know where he stands. So that's one thing. He stood up for his convictions. It's an arguable point in my, I mean, easy to argue. Maybe he shouldn't have come at all, right?
Right.
This is Trump's coming out party. Maybe he shouldn't have been there at all. I don't think we're going to know the impact of it for, in terms of his career, for the next year or two. He made the what we would call the conservative case just as clear as could be. Would he have been better off to stay in Texas? I'm not sure, given all the controversy. But God bless him. He stood up and said what he believed to be true, and then left the stage. What do you think, Ed?
Well, it's very controversial. I talked to my email back and forth with my son. My son applauded him. I thought he should have, like you said, I think he should have stayed home, like Jeb Bush did. People have pointed out that he took the pledge to support the GOP candidate like everybody else. On the other hand, Donald Trump said some horrific things about his wife and his dad. So I think, like you, who knows how this is going to affect him going forward. I tend to think you just don't show up if everyone knows what the convention's about and what's supposed to happen. But we'll have to wait and see. But that's what everybody's talking about, was that controversial moment. And I'm not sure I've ever seen a speaker booed.
Anything like that.
So, no. But you know what? That goes along with this whole year of politics.
That's right.
I've never seen anything like it either. So
forget everything you thought you knew about politics.
That's right.
And still, it's only July, folks. There's much more to come.
much more. And we got the Democrats next week.
That's
so
right.
We'll see what happens next week, where we're going, well, I've never seen that either. So. All right. Well, we're going to move on, folks. We'll be talking about politics from now until November. So, you've come to expect that. Try to bring a Christian perspective on some of the issues anyway. And we will continue going forward. All right. We're going to move on to our first guest, Dr. Lenny Lucchetti. I just love saying that as an Italian. Associate Professor of Christian Ministries at Wesley Seminary of Indiana Wesleyan University. He's author of the book we're going to discuss with him, True Depth, Moving Beyond Cultural Churchianity. Lenny, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, so cultural churchianity, help our listeners understand what you mean by the word churchianity.
Yeah, in the book I distinguish between cultural churchianity and biblical Christianity. So I think of it this way. Cultural churchianity is about getting. Biblical Christianity, I think, is about giving. Cultural churchianity is egocentric. It's about me. And biblical Christianity is Christocentric. It's about Christ. Cultural churchianity is about being a good person. Biblical Christianity is about being godly. Cultural churchianity is about happiness. What can God do to make me happy? And biblical Christianity, as far as my reading of, especially the New Testament, is about holiness, not happiness. What God does to make us holy, so that holiness becomes our greatest happiness. So that is it in a nutshell. I could say more, but I'll leave it at that.
Well, your whole book is meant to help us rediscover discipleship at a deeper level in a new way. How do we get it? We've got evangelical churches, all stripes, all sizes, worship styles, worship music, books galore. How did we get in this fix we're in? I mean, I think a lot of people, Lenny, would agree with you about cultural churchianity. How did we get where we are today in American Christianity? And sketch for us at least some of the beginning steps we need to take to get out of the mess we're in.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I've been a pastor for 15 years, and now I'm sort of a pastor to pastors as a seminary professor. And I'll say this, there's a lot of people who want to go deeper. So I don't think the church has sold out in the sense of not wanting to go deep. I just think we have, in a sense, been inoculated to the gospel. A lot of times what we do is more cultural, more American even, than it is biblical. And I'm not anti-American by any stretch of the imagination. I heard you guys talking about the convention last night, which I watched the entire thing, so I'm pretty exhausted today. but a lot of times what we a lot of times we take our cues, especially in the North American church, we take our cues from culture and even from political values instead of the values of Christ. And, we're driven more, for example, we're driven more at times by consumerism than we are by sort of selfless service. I had a guy in one of my churches, to give you an example, the guy I pastored, he was a good guy. He came into the life of our church, seemed to really enjoy our congregation and what we were doing, and then I went through a series where I was talking about deeper discipleship and sort of the cost, really, of discipleship. You know, grace is free, but it's not cheap. And so I was talking about how, we respond to the grace of God through by dying to self, losing our life so that we can find it in the most meaningful way. And I remember he sent me a letter, left the church, sent me a letter, which was good of him to at least let me know why he was leaving. But he basically went after me because he felt like I was presenting Christianity different than what he was used to or thought was true. And that is, and his theology was a health and wealth theology. I found out through his letter that, if we really are faithful, life will come up roses. We'll get the house of our dream, the job of our dream, the girl of our dream, the guy of our dream, whatever. And that is not always the case for the Christian. Sometimes being faithful is painful, but in the long run is fruitful. And so that, I think, is what we're up against, at least in the North American church, regardless of denomination, is trying to tell disciples that sometimes the deeper you go into Christ, the more challenging, not less challenging, the more challenging it will be, the harder at times it will be, the more suffering, perhaps, which is the way of Christ. But in the long run, it will produce a fruitful, fulfilling, faithful sort of life.
Well, we can go all the way back to the first century and the Corinthian church that was so influenced by the culture around it. And now you're talking about the American church, and it seems like every church and every generation and every part of the world has to battle through the cultural influences that try to or can sometimes successfully warp the Christian life that believers are living. So how do Christians, and I'm sure there are pastors listening. You said you're kind of, pastor to pastors. What do you tell them? I mean, how do you lead people to a place where you're basically successfully showing them you're a fish in water? You've got to kind of break out of the water because fish don't know they're wet. So how does a Christian know they're being influenced by culture when it's all around us? And how do you stop that influence and get them into a real Christian walk?
Yeah. You're right in pointing out the Corinthian church. I mean, Paul had his hands full trying to sort of reframe the gospel for a Corinthian church that was so driven by Greco-Roman values, and even Jesus with the Jews, right, his disciples who were Jewish. I mean, they had already in their minds what the Messiah would look like when he showed up, and Jesus didn't quite fit the bill. They were looking for a Messiah, a Jewish Messiah who would come and kick the tar out of the Roman government, right, put the Jews back on top again politically. And when Jesus didn't come and kick Roman butt, excuse the expression, but didn't take life but gave his life, they were thrown for a loop. They really struggled with that. And so yeah. So how do we reframe the gospel? I think it's slow and arduous. I think it's not going to be a quick fix program. I think it's for Christian leaders especially. I think it's modeling true depth discipleship that I think it's teaching. I think it's pointing out what God does to make disciples. So in the book, I talk about these five dynamics, how does God make disciples? He does it through revelation, restoration, transformation, sanctification, and mission. And so much of the time what we talk about in terms of discipleship is what we do. Programs and procedures and policies. And what I really wanted to do in my book is emphasize what God actually does and has been doing and will do to make deep disciples. And he does it through the church. He doesn't do it outside of the church. I mean, God does it through the church in partnership with Christian community. but we have to get back to sort of a theological bent. How does God do this? And so I talk about those five dynamics, and we can unpack a few of them if you want.
Well, Lenny, let me ask you this question, and just to follow up. Is there a difference in the way a church is going to look or feel that really takes these five things seriously? I mean, churches have buildings, they've got programs, we've got choir, we got worship, we've got, you know, we've got all the stuff that makes up the American church. Is a church that's really committed to going true depth in disciple making, is it going to be organized differently, feel different, look different? How are we going to spot a church like that when we see one?
Question. Yeah, I think it will come in all shapes, styles, and sizes, all denominations. We often critique mega churches as being shallow, and there are some that are in terms of discipleship, but there are some that are doing a great job, and they're large, and they're moving, and they're impacting their community. I would say, you know, what are the marks of discipleship? I think they're the five things I just named would be evident in a congregation where, you know, people are overcoming addiction, marriages are being restored, parent-child relationships are being reconciled, there's ethnic race reconciliation going on, there's significant transformation that's happening to the community in which that local church exists. So I would say in a nutshell, where true depth discipleship is happening, where it's not just cultural churchianity, but the true biblical Christianity, you're going to see people embodying the values of a kingdom not of this world in their personal lives and families and workplaces and schools. But you're also going to see the community around the church be transformed in significant ways, where, again, people are overcoming addiction, people who are oppressed, being dignified through the process of discipleship. I pastored a church where, we did a lot of things wrong, but one of the things that happened in the life of that congregation was people in the community who weren't even Christians yet would send people to our congregation and say, you know, go to that church for help. They care about people. They'll help you. And we met felt needs, but we also were clear in that our mission was to sort of connect people to Christ. And so when a congregation has the community outside of the church doing their evangelism for them, in a sense, that's one of the evidences, I think, that that congregation is going deeper in biblical Christianity.
Our guest has been Dr. Lenny Lucchetti, who's Associate Professor of Christian Ministries at Wesleyan Seminary, which is at Indiana Wesleyan University. The book he's written is True Depth, Moving Beyond Cultural Churchianity. Lenny, we have about 30 seconds. Let folks know where they can get a copy of your book.
Yeah, thanks. You can order that on WPH Store, WPH, that's Wesleyan Publishing House, store.com. You can find it on Amazon as well. There are churches that go through this as sort of an all-church study. There are small group resources. There are sermon notes that go with the book. They're free. So if you wanted to get this going in your small group or in the life of your congregation, those resources are available at WPHstore.com.
Lenny, excellent job. Thank you so much for being our guest on today's Issues.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
The name of the book is True Depth. The author is Dr. Lenny Lucchetti, L-U-C-H-E-T-T-I, Lucchetti. You can't go wrong with an Italian, folks. Take it from me. Well, actually, you can, but not this one. So pick up a copy of True Depth. Ray Pritchard and I will be back after the break. We'll be talking to Jessica Webb, getting an update on the prayer walk. I don't know if it's a controversy or not, but God moved. And then we'll also be talking to Dave and Beth Weichel about growing close to God through loss. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We'll be back.
King of the Wild Frontier.
The music's free. I know we call it Learning University.
Of necessity.
Trivia Friday.
True.
Ding, ding, ding,
yes.
Ding, ding.
Yes.
Oh, really?
That's correct. What, giraffes do not have vocal cords.
So you won't a cheeseburger without cheese.
Hold the cheese.
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Take a break with Tim Wildman and the gang. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. From the Republican National Convention, I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. There was quite a bit of political theater here in Cleveland last night. At the center of it all was Senator Ted Cruz. As you know by now, Senator Cruz did not endorse Donald Trump in his convention speech, instead urging Republicans to vote their conscience. A large number of delegates tried to shout down the senator. More boos than applause as he left the stage. The RNC and the Trump campaign were shocked and outraged, and it was all a great big act because they had a copy of the senator's speech hours beforehand. They could have pulled the plug. Now look, I understand why Senator Cruz did what he did. Mr. Trump called him Lying Ted, attacked his wife, accused his father of being involved in the JFK assassination. I get that. But Senator Cruz also signed a pledge to support the Republican nominee. And last night, the senator proved he is not a man of his word. That's troubling. In Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. My co-host is Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Well, I think it was earlier in the week. Maybe it was late last week. I can't quite remember, but we had Jessica Webb in studio with us. Jessica's an administrative assistant for the AFA Foundation here on staff at American Family Association. And she had a prayer walk, prayer walks lined up for some of the local schools. And that just seemed like such a great idea. And then the devil kind of raised his ugly head, and so we have kind of an update. It's been a kind of a wild week, but Jessica, welcome back.
Hey, thank you.
So this is your second appearance in the last 2 weeks. These prayer walks that you had signed up, you've been praying about it with some other folks. Are that mostly ladies or all?
Different people, parents, grandparents, pastors, okay, from the area have been coming out and praying.
And so you had gotten permission from school officials, which
exactly
is what we always recommend. You can't just show up at a public school. But it's during the summer, no kids there, no teachers there. Everything seemed to be going well. And then what happened?
Well, I got a call on Monday from the superintendent who stated that Freedom From Religion Foundation had contacted the school and were very unpleased to hear about the walks and wanted them canceled immediately. If not, then they threatened the school to sue them. So, of course, the superintendent, trying to be protective of the school, contacted me and let me know of the news and that they were regretfully having to cancel, you know, and asked that I not move forward with that. So in my politeness, I said, okay, we will still pray, but we will do it off of campus and be respectful of your wishes. And then, of course, since I am here at AFA and I have so many great wise counselors here, I started seeking, you know, guidance on how to go forward with this. And so we came up with several different things, emailed the superintendent, giving him options and let him know that we will back him on this, that the Freedom From Freedom From Religion Foundation really didn't have any leg in this, that they were just threatening. It was just empty threats. But yesterday, I actually got a call back from him that he was reversing his decision and allowing us to move forward. So we're so thankful for him, you know, standing up and being bold and giving us this opportunity to continue to move forward, regardless of the threats that they have received.
And that was, we had contacted here at AFA, First Liberty Institute, sure, which is Kelly Shackelford heads that up. Most of our listeners are aware of some of the really great work that some of these Christian legal firms do. We contacted them, and Kelly Shackelford said, no, Freedom From Religion Foundation has no legal leg to stand on, and the school is perfectly within its rights to allow
the prayer walks.
The prayer walks, and of course, they would defend the schools for free if Freedom From Religion Foundation went forward. But a couple of things that I just wanted to make mention, because I think this is an excellent lesson. That's what we're talking about. Even though this is a local thing that happened, almost all our stories are local somewhere.
Right.
You know, it's happening in some school or in some town somewhere. But Jessica, first of all, the fact that you and the others who want to participate care so much about the students who go to our public schools, even many of the people who are going to pray are homeschoolers.
Right.
You're a homeschooler,
right,
as well. But you care enough about the children who are going to school that you wanted to pray for them and for the teachers. That's the first thing. The second thing is, it seems like God gave you a plan on how to do that.
Right.
The third thing is, you did it the right way. You went through the proper channels. Christians don't need to be, you know, arrogant and demanding. And then the fourth and fifth thing, which is what's happened this week, the devil tried to resist it,
right,
using individuals who hate God, and that's the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And then you stuck to it.
Right.
And that there are options. Christians don't need to just simply give up. Sometimes you press forward, and with prayer and the right kind of networking and knowing the laws,
right,
it helps in this situation.
That's right. And I'm thankful to be here, but even if I didn't have the backing of AFA, I would still have done the same procedures. I had created a Facebook page for this specifically, and I went on there, and I had made sure the superintendent was aware that I was going to go public with this.
Right.
I was going to let those who were participating know what has happened. And so that's exactly what I did, and I just encourage people, you know, if you are willing to contact him, let me know, and just put yes in the comments. And I was completely surprised about all of the different people who were willing to do that. I didn't provide anything as far as a contact. I hadn't quite gotten that far. I was still in the works with that. But the people who are so bold in our county, and I'm so thankful for those God-fearing men and women who said, no, we can't do this. This is beyond, this is attacking our religious liberties. This is a violation. It's discrimination. We're going to stand behind you. And if he does reverse it, we'll stand behind him as well. We want him to know that we will back him up on this. So we're so thankful that he did, and we appreciate him contacting us and letting us know that we can move forward with that.
Well, plenty of lessons for Christians to learn, to take to heart. You know, this is kind of the buckle of the Bible Belt, so to speak, here in Mississippi. You don't expect there to be this
kind of
thing happening, but it does happen here.
Right.
There are atheist groups and secular groups that just don't want the name of Jesus to be proclaimed, and they don't, and they despise things like prayer. But Christians have a right, at least at this point in our country's history, we still have the right to stand up for what we believe. And I'm proud of you, Jessica, and proud of the other men and women who are going to the prayer walks, but also those who participated in contacting the school administration and letting them know that they wanted this reversed. And I also appreciate your attitude in telling the school officials that we're gonna back them up too.
Right.
Do the right thing. So
that's right.
Plenty of lessons to learn here. Way to go, Jessica. Way to stick to it and fight through. I mean, you're a younger lady. You're expecting a child.
I am.
So look, folks out there, if you're listening, if a pregnant lady can do it, you can do it. She's carrying a life here, and all the physical changes, I'm sure she's tired. If she can do it, you can do it.
That's
so
right.
Just take
be encouraged.
Be encouraged. Thank you, Jessica, so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Well, that's just a great lesson for us to learn, and also not to be surprised that the devil doesn't like things like prayer in schools. And this was not going to be an in-your-face kind of thing where you parade in the hallways and shove a track in a kid's face as they're going to lunch or to the bathroom. This was during the summer, and just simply praying that God will bless and protect our children and teachers and the staff and administration. So a great victory, and we are appreciative of all the folks who participated in this and will be doing the prayer walks going forward.
You know, Ed, one of the little things, that little parts of that that probably was very important, was when Jessica got the additional information she needed, she went back to the superintendent, gave some options, and then said, if you reverse this, we will back you up.
Right.
That's so important, because superintendents, by and large, they're under a lot of pressure. And so if they're going to make a decision or rescind a decision, they need to know that folks are going to be with them. So this is like a test case. It's a good model. This is how we ought to conduct ourselves. And as you said, if Jessica can do it, the rest of us can too.
Well, and the superintendent, I have no hard feelings towards him. He the threat of a lawsuit,
right.
And I'm sure he went to the school board attorney, and they probably, he or she probably said, well, this could be bad. It could cost us a lot of money. This kind of thing happens all over the country, where a letter, a phone call, is intimidating, and you don't want a big, brouhaha, and you certainly don't want the school district, to wind up in court. But there are options out there in terms of defending schools, and this is a no-brainer, just allowing people to go into the empty school and pray. And I also mention this, Jessica Webb, who we just had on. Jessica's very sweet young lady, and she represented the Lord well in this. She's, soft-spoken, not harsh, not critical, when she calls. So she just very sweetly told the superintendent, we're going to make this public, but we'll back you. And I just think that kind of attitude goes a long way, I think, Ray, when you're dealing with something controversial.
A kind answer, a gentle answer, turns away wrath.
Right.
Superintendents are under a lot of pressure, not just in Tupelo, but all over the nation, right?
Right.
And they're trying to avoid extra problems. So if we go in there swashbuckling Christians,
that's a beautiful image right there. I like that.
Swords drawn, ready for battle, and uttering harsh words and so on, then we shouldn't be surprised when people turn us off. I mean, Jessica modeled a truly compassionate, speak the truth and love kind of approach, and it worked. And I think, Ed, it'll work in a lot of situations.
Ray, I'm not going to steal that metaphor. I'm going to borrow it. I'm going to give proper attribution when I use it in the future. But swashbuckling Christians, that's perfect. I just see Errol Flynn, on a rope, going onto the ship, with the pirates and
swinging that sword
and the rousing music. And that's perfect. This is why you're a doctor. This is why you're Dr. Ray Pritchard. Perfect job.
Well, God bless Jessica. She was whatever the opposite of swashbuckling is. I can't think of it right, but whatever it is, that's what she was, and that's one reason it worked.
So kind and gentle.
That's right.
All right, we're going to move along to our next guest, Dave and Beth Weichel. Dave and Beth have worked in full-time ministry, business, and public education for more than 30 years, and they have co-authored a book, The Way of Hope, Growing Close to God Through Loss. And my understanding is we have both Dave and Beth on the phone today. Is that right?
Sure. We're glad to be with you.
All right. Well, thank you for being on today's issues. This is a book about loss, and it is about God as well, because a lot of people in our country are hurting. Tremendous, you know, whenever you have darkness growing in a culture like it appears to be in our country, the amount of suffering grows exponentially. So there are a lot of people out there who are suffering loss. They've got, you know, kids in rehab, or they've lost jobs, or someone has died, or they get a terrible pronouncement from a doctor about disease. And yet, God can be found in the midst of that kind of suffering. Tell us, Dave, we'll start with you. We'll kind of alternate. Ray will pitch in. We'll get both of you in. But Dave, let me start with you. Why is it so important for Christians to find God when they're suffering, but then also to point the way to other people when they're going through tribulation?
Great question. I really believe that we as believers don't deal with our loss. And we have a phrase that we use periodically. We all have broken hearts. It's how we deal with brokenness that determines whether we dwell in life or loss. And so when something happens, whether it's personal or we hear something in about Dallas, we all react emotionally and we feel for them. But then it's not really selfishness. We come back to our brokenness. And if we haven't dealt with it, the Lord is giving us the opportunity to do that, to deal with it through Scripture, through we believe that the way of hope gives real direction as to how to handle that so that life can happen. Quite often we run into people who are just reliving loss year after year, the same loss year after year. And when you allow God to dwell in your life and using the word, it really creates life again, and it's very valuable.
Beth, one of the things we hear, I think somewhat in the church, but certainly out in the broader society, when it comes to the question of loss and suffering, it's sometimes rather glibly said, well, time heals all wounds. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, I hear that too. And I will say, because we've walked through an intense season of loss in many different areas, it's just what God allowed. It wasn't a matter of time. Time gives us some distance. Time kind of eases that initial rawness. But until we turn to God, until we say, I have no answers, I just hurt, and I can't live this way, there's no other solution. We've just come to find. And so our audience is those people that are afflicted, those people that are open to a biblical point of view, and those people who do want help.
Well, Dave, share if, I mean, this is, I'm sure, intensely personal, but share with our listening audience about some of your own personal experiences with loss.
Well, we've had a number of things happen. In 2005, it started, it seemed like. We had a serious health issue, elder care demands, you know, having a father who needed a lot of help. We actually all had a father, and we also had Beth had a mom that was dealing with that. We lost a son in Iraq, and you know, we didn't lose him. We just are not with him right now. He was a believer, loved the Lord. He was captain, leading and doing what he wanted to do. Secondary losses, we talk about that. Strained relationships, we had that. A miscarriage, a divorce, legal crisis, financial loss, retirement, adjustments, you know, and really through all this shifts in friendship. And so when we went through all this, we started looking, and you know, first of all, looking in books and all that, and then ultimately got to where we should have been in the Scriptures. And the Lord just really led us to, in many situations, we actually had Music Evangelism Fellowship, or Foundation, excuse me, ask if we'd teach a workshop or in their conference. And so we just started preparing, and then the Lord just gave us workshops throughout the country and the world. And so we are able to show up, have dealt with loss, and then from there deal with all kinds of truth in the scriptures. And so, you know, one of the things we learn is that loss requires the skill of a warrior. And so in Psalm 144, it talks about that truly God himself enables us to live as a warrior and have those skills.
And I can read a couple verses there because we love that. It's about the battle. It says, "Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for battle. He is my fortress, my stronghold, my deliverer, my shield, he in whom I take refuge."
Is there a sense in which, and I'll ask either one of you to respond, Dave or Beth, is there a sense in which, I mean, we always search for reasons. We're not going to find ultimately some answers until we're finally with the Lord in heaven. But is there a sense in which what you went through, that long list of things, Dave, that you gave us, the death of a son and everything else, is there a sense in which that God was using this to prepare you for spiritual warfare? Or is it necessary? Is loss, in the broader sense, is it necessary if we are going to grow spiritually and become all that God wants us to be?
I personally think that that's how God uses loss. I don't think he dictated Ian going home to be with him at that point, but that's what happened in this world. And so we talk in the way of hope of purposeful brokenness. And so when there's brokenness, God can use it for a purpose of growth. And it's almost like he decides to disciple us. And so he deals with situations in our life. He allows us to grow. And we use the word. I mean, we just really believe that the only answer is in the scriptures. And so there's such a value in that.
Well, I was going to also add that along with that, it's just the posture of being teachable and just surrendering every day. There's a psalm that I actually, when I realized God was calling us into a whole new area of life and ministry, is just opening a whole new calling, I just had the sense I was retired from public education, so I put these business cards together, and it's from Psalm 25. And it just says, and I believe this, "Make me know thy ways, O Lord, teach me thy paths, lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation, for thee I wait all the day." And that's how my days would be. I would just sit there and I would just, you know, start with my Lord and look at the scriptures and get my spiritual notebook ready to take some notes and just go through my day waiting for him to continue to build life again into me.
And one of the things that I want to encourage, and I'm a former pastor, and I can't think of a time I taught on loss unless it came up in you know, the verse-by-verse teaching that I was doing, but I didn't really deal with it a whole bunch, that I think we as leaders in our churches need to somehow create a mode or a method to help people deal with their loss. And one of the ways we have is that God has given us a workshop. It's a DVD, and they're both called The Way of Hope. And it enables people to use it in just a beautiful way. And Wesleyan Publishing House is literally giving, along with By His Design, our ministry, the whole packet so that churches can start doing that. And start ministering to people because they need it. They really do.
We are talking with Dave and Beth Weichel, and they have, through the many losses that they have experienced, have come to an understanding, or at least somewhat. Some of this obviously is always shrouded in mystery for us, but they've written a book, The Way of Hope, Growing Close to God Through Loss. Guys, we're kind of running out of time here. I will hope to get as many questions in as we can. Let me ask you this, again, for either one of you or both of you. You're talking about finding, purpose in suffering, God's purpose. In fact, you have a chapter titled The Point of Suffering. What do you say to people who have almost the opposite reaction. I'm sure that the devil, you know, moves in to do these kinds of things during such trauma. But a lot of people, when they go through these kinds of situations, they wonder if God cares or if he's even real. So that's kind of the opposite direction from the one you're advocating. How do you encourage people? Yeah, God is real, and he does care, even when things are going so tragically wrong.
Well, for us, what we've really come to is that it's how much you know of God, how much you've prepared yourself to know him before something huge hits. Dave and I are trained as disaster relief chaplains as well with Billy Graham's ministry, and we run into this all the time. If you go to a disaster site, people feel those exact things that you've described. And so what we say in our material is that it's about knowing. It's about knowing the things of God that don't change, because our lives are constantly in flux and there's chaos everywhere we turn. And so the things that, when as we sit with the scriptures, as we sit in his presence makes all the difference. And so somebody who doesn't realize, you know, they're so disoriented and they're so angry and fearful, you know, to help them understand, it's not about leaving all that behind. It's about letting God integrate that into your character and making Christ the central focus.
Guys, we are just about out of time. You mentioned something about a DVD. Go ahead and give the name of your book again, where they can find it, and then a website if they want to get some of this material, or if they want to keep up with you, or if they want to invite you to their church to speak on these issues. Give them some place to go.
Sure. Our website is By His Design. That's our name of our ministry, byhisdesignonline.com. And you will find all kinds of help there, direction. You'll find our book, The Way of Hope, Growing Close to God Through Loss. The other thing that you can do is connect with me, and I can work with folks to help them get workshops going. We're really starting to do that significantly, because the loss is not just death, it's all kinds of loss. And so that's what our ministry deals with. And so my email is dave@byhisdesign.com.
No.
Or .co. I keep saying not com, so anyway, .co. So dave@byhisdesign.co. And we'd love to talk to people. We really would. And all of the information is on our website.
Well, there's certainly, I mean, there is certainly a lot of devastation out in our culture and around the world, really, and that's sort of what happens when a society seems to begin to decay, that devastation happens. And so the voice of the church is important, and that's what you guys are representing, the voice of Christ, giving hope to people who have none or once had it and have lost it. So thank you so much, guys, for being on our show.
Oh, it was a joy. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Dave and Beth Weikel, their last names are spelled W-E-I-K-E-L, W-E-I-K-E-L, Weikel. The name of the book is The Way of Hope, Growing Close to God Through Loss. Well, today's issues is not over yet, folks. We're going to take a five-minute break. I always want to say a short five-minute break, but it's not really short. We're going to take a break for news for 5 minutes, and then Ray Pritchard and I will be back, and we'll be talking with Douglas Axe, who's director of the Biologic Institute. It's a research organization launched by the Discovery Institute. We're going to talk to him about undeniable how biology confirms our intuition that life is designed. We're going to be talking about intelligent design. You're listening to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. We'll be back after 5 minutes. Please come back and join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.